He was known as the king of the airways in BC for close to 40 years. If it was on the public agenda, Webster was there. When prisoners at the BC Pen rioted and took hostages in 1963, they asked Webster to resolve the standoff. They asked for him because he was trusted at a time when mainstream media was believed to be fulfilling the responsibilities of the Fourth Estate, to step in, stand up, advocate, call out, and record the people and events of our lives. Since Webster's retirement in 1998, the media landscape has changed dramatically. In Vancouver, for example, the major powerhouses of media in print, radio, and TV have all seen their constituencies dwindle. Along with the shrinking audiences, so too goes ad revenue, which in turn leads to cuts in newsrooms, and that leads to further reductions in audiences. The money simply isn't there to support media outlets that we trust to provide an overview of our complete province, with regions, cities, and municipalities, rural areas all being represented. There aren't enough resources to go around, and that robs readers, listeners, and viewers of valuable and vital information they need so that they can make informed decisions. Alternative or non-mainstream media outlets have popped up and are attempting to fill the void. The challenge, however, is that most of those outlets, including this show, have fewer resources than the big players. Then add in a less than full-bodied embracing of journalistic standards, and the value of the information shared through smaller or single-issue outlets can diminish and be dismissed. We invited two-time Webster Award winner Jazz Joe Hall and past MLA for Richmond, Queensborough, to join us for a conversation that matters about his take on the state of the media.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Jazz Joe Hall, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, Jazz, you have a long and distinguished career in the media. Mm-hmm. And for a portion of your career now, you've been outside of the media, working in the corporate sector and also in the political realm. So you've had a chance to look at media from a wide variety of perspectives. Mm-hmm. When you think about your own experience and then your experience sort of post being in the day-to-day grind of daily news, how do you think daily news, really we can talk about British Columbia, is doing as far as his ability to deliver information that will help viewers or readers make informed choices?
I think there's some challenges there, certainly. On the media side, I think it just comes down to bodies more than anything. You've seen a significant portion of journalists leave the industry, or particularly older journalists and mid-career journalists, those journalists that would provide that guidance to a younger generation of journalists. The mid-career journalists especially, I think, is quite challenging. They're the ones that would have been the senior journalists now, senior editors, and guiding those young journalists today. So that's one of the things I certainly have noticed. I think it's the lack of those on the front lines, and it's very difficult. And technology can't change that. And as much as we talk about what technology is able to do in control rooms and on the technical side, but in regards to the specifics of journalism, it's still people-intensive and labor-intensive, and you can't change that.
Okay, so what is at the core of good journalism?
The ability to tell a story, the ability to get as close to the truth that is possible, and to aspire to that. You have to build a culture in newsrooms to do that. And that's been really tough, I think, in the last 10, 15 years, because there's been a constant amount of layoffs, pushback probably from the corporate sector because you've got a greater concentration of ownership, which is a challenge, I think, for a lot of newsrooms. And not just because they're coming down and telling you what to say or do, that's not the issue. But I think just that you have a greater variety of choice is so very important. But if you look at news today, let's look at broadcast for a second. On average, people watch about 15 to 18 hours of television a week, give or take. 25 years ago, you'd have your set channels and pay probably some specialty channels. Today, if you look at it, you've got your Netflixes and your Disneys taking your time. You got your kids playing Roblox and Fortnite. You've got your traditional channels, of course. You got your specialty channels, of course. Then, of course, you got streaming YouTube. So you've got all of this time, and you're spending the same amount of time in front of the screen, but is now it's stretched over so many more mediums and opportunities there to take up your time, that it's very difficult for those local stations to have as much of that time as they would like. Now, you take a newscast, and the average voter, or the average viewer, is older as well, probably 50s and into their 60s. In the U.S., if you look at the CNNs, the Foxes, and the MSNBCs, you're looking at an average audience in their 60s. But you take that content that they're producing and put it on Facebook, and the average age drops to about 37, which is a good thing. But the quarter, the ad that you're charging for that television station, the television station is charging, is still significantly higher than what you're going to make off Facebook, particularly Facebook and Twitter and those kind of mediums. And they're probably not sharing in that profit. Mark Zuckerberg, I think, is scooping up a lot of those dollars, or Google is, or Twitter is, and they probably need to be sharing a lot more of that, I think, over the long term. I think you're going to see some of that. It has to happen. But that's the challenge. The 30-second ad or the quarter page still pays for the much of the journalism in this city and in this province. And as you slowly chip away at the importance of the quarter page ad, whether it be the Vancouver Sun or Province, or at a small town paper, then that becomes a challenge. Because, as they say, the digital dimes don't pay for it still. And that's the challenge these news organizations have.
That business model doesn't support good journalism, though, then do we not have issues? Because good journalism costs money. It doesn't come free. It's not just because somebody says, I feel like I have a responsibility to keep my community informed. Yeah. Now, that may have been what took you into the career, but you still have to live.
Yeah, you still have to pay those bills. I mean, the equipment may have been cheaper. Yeah, of course, it is a lot cheaper today. Let's say than buying a $60,000 camera, the cameras may be a little bit cheaper, but the labor-intensive side is still there. The editor, the photojournalists, the editors in the newsroom, the journalists, producers, all of that takes money, and it's no different than on the newspaper side. And people still, the agenda is still in this province set by the mainstream media. There are very few places now, even in a 500-channel universe, where we have that common experience. And the morning newspaper is still that. And you may be looking at the stories the night before, so be it. But the 6 o'clock newscast still does matter. It may be watching at 11. You may be watching on a 24-hour wheel. Or you may be watching in the morning or bits and pieces here and there.
Or on demand when you want to, because it's online as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the core experience the journalistic fraternity provide, whether it be newspapers or television or radio, is still very important. You have bloggers today, you have organized news organizations that are web-based that may charge or take donations, or maybe a monthly fee that you pay. They may have a newsroom of 3 or 4 or 5 people. That still doesn't compare with the Vancouver Sun or Province. It just doesn't. It Right. doesn't compare with a television newsroom. It doesn't compare, quite frankly, even for a local newspaper in Richmond, Langley, or in Salmon Arm, because you have that institutional knowledge and history that's been there for a long time. So while these pockets and changes that you're seeing in journalism are important, I still think the traditional news organizations still drive the agenda in this province and so many other parts of the
world. Well, it's called the fourth estate or fourth power for a reason, because it holds so much sway in the realm of public opinion. Yeah. And, you know, the media can be advocates. They can frame things in political environments. They can do things that other mechanisms of communication can't do. And so then that raises the question, how important is it that those mainstream media outlets that may be, well, they all are suffering a loss in revenue, remain committed to the idea that they have to get as close to the truth as they possibly can? Why is it that we have to have confidence that we can trust that that's where their interests and objectives lie?
Because ultimately the relationship is with the viewer and the reader. Once that is lost, they become irrelevant. And I'm sure on the business side, they'll feel it as well. And that's the challenge that every news organization has every single day when you get up and say, what does the public care about? It goes back to what's the water cooler conversation? What's the conversation in the community today? What do they actually care about beyond what a press release might say from a company or from a political party? And being able to decipher through that is so very, very important. Are they always right? Absolutely not. You do make mistakes along the way. And sometimes there are those who feel that the challenging, when you challenge somebody, a politician or a labor leader or a CEO, that perhaps some organizations aren't aggressive enough. Or that we don't follow a particular story long enough or walk away from it at times. And that's part of it. It's not just a question of covering a story. It's staying with the story for 6 months, a year and a half. And that's where it goes back to that mid-career journalist or the senior journalist who's had 20 years of everything told to them so they can see through the lines. Right. And that's so very important.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what we're kind of losing. And on top of that, I'm very honest with you here, you got 24-hour news thrown in. The hamster wheel that constantly needs to be fed, where, you know, when I was in journalism and we had launched a 24-hour local station, we tried to stay away from that because it would just chew time away from you, where you could be looking and talking to other your sources and contacts rather than being live in front of a situation for 4 hours of the day, because it'd eat up time.
Right.
But that is still needed in regards to the beast. So in many ways, when a big story hits now, you know, you look at a 24-hour news station, when it's local or international, we go there first because we think it's going to happen because we want information right here and now. But the flagship stage newscasts still make money and probably pay for a lot of what other journalists don't want to be doing in regards to the 24-hour news. So while it is important, there is this fascination with live for the sake of live sometimes that really undercuts sometimes the credibility and more importantly frustrates journalists and staff who want to be out covering stories. And that's the challenge that's there every single day.
You know, you raise the question, like, why doesn't a journalistic outlet stay with that story longer or see it through? And I've wondered about this question quite a bit, even when I was reporting myself. Mm-hmm. And I came to appreciate, well, that may not necessarily be the responsibility of that news outlet. The outlet is there to tell you these are the issues that are of importance that are in play in our community now. I'm giving you access to information, and if you need to know more, well, then you also have to take some responsibility there. Because I need to also tomorrow tell you about something else that is of value, so that over the course of a year, that when you keep tuning into us, I'm going to give you as complete of a picture of what's happening in your region as possible. If I exhaust this one, I can't get to all those other. And this is where media starts to get, you know, fractured, because you will find somebody who will say, well, I'm going to stick with that forever.
Yeah. Well, but you know, I agree with what you're saying there. But when a news organization does pick a story that feels is vitally important, and that's a subjective decision sometimes, but if you can stay with that story, it's amazing what does come out, right? And that's
true.
The issue. And it may take 6 months or 8 months of constantly doing stories and your viewers and readers listening to you, hearing you, seeing it, and a source may pop out 6 months into it. But if you do one or two or four stories or follow a story for a month, sometimes those sources don't come out right away. Sometimes you don't know where to go from day one, but day 27, you have a better sense of where you need to be going, and you're talking to the players that need to be talked to.
You touched on the topic of democracy, because that is an important function of journalism in a democratic society.
Yeah.
You know, the term the fourth estate is believed came from the benches of parliament in the UK saying, you know, here we are here, but the fourth estate up there is maybe the most important one. Why? Because we're reporting back to voters and the public what's going on. But without the ability to do that and do it in a way that gives people accurate information, well, then those organizations get to operate under the cover of darkness.
Absolutely. And then look, I think the corporate class does need a journalist watching them.
Yeah,
especially in resource development, environment. Those very important issues, especially here in British Columbia. You look at white-collar crime.
Yep.
All those issues are very important.
Issues of integrity.
The political class needs an eye kept on it, always. And having spent some time in public office, I can tell you we could use more journalists. I'm not saying nefarious things are going on, but the more journalists that are covering it, the more journalists asking questions is a healthy thing.
And that goes back to the point that then people get a clearer sense of where the truth might be on issues.
And to be selfish, let me be selfish for a second. As an elected official, I want an informed citizenry because I get frustrated sometimes where you're trying to have conversations with citizens, even with basic information they're not aware of because they haven't seen it in the paper or haven't read it, or maybe they've just missed it. But I'm seeing that. I think an educated populace is very, very important, number one. a strong media is also important because it keeps, as an elected official, would keep me in line as well in regards to, keeps me on my toes in regards to knowing my stuff, knowing the facts, being challenged on my own views and perspectives is so very important, just as much as I was able to challenge government. I appreciate being a challenge myself, and that's part of that.
So we have that mainstream group that goes out to the masses.
Yeah.
They're in radio, television,
print.
There's online newsrooms now that cater to that.
Yeah.
Do they have a responsibility to be objective, or are they allowed to have a point of view?
I think that's a very good question. Let's step back from this for a moment. You look at Canada and the United States. We have that broader conversation that journalists should be right down the middle, to be fair, balanced, no bias. I have no problem with that. That's what I've always aspired to, right? But let's look at the UK for a second.
Yeah.
You pick up The Guardian, you're going to get a center-left perspective. You pick up the Financial Times, you're going to get a center-right perspective. Now, I think generally they're centrist, but they're all going to skew a little to the left, skew a little to the right. You pick up a tabloid in London, you know it's going to have a populist bent to it.
Right.
Right?
And you know it when you buy it.
And you know it when you buy it. Now, I think part of that comes from being one country with a population of 70, 80 million, one time zone, a collective there, right?
Right.
A country like ours, 35 million people over five time zones, it's hard to sort of speak nationally. Even the Globe and Mail and the National Post will always get accused of being a Toronto-centric media outlet, right? And to a certain degree, they prove the point of many British Columbians sometimes as well.
Yeah.
So it is uniquely a Canadian and American sort of perspective that we have to be absolutely unbiased. Every question I ask as a journalist comes from my perspective.
Yes.
I try to be always very broad, try to be centrist, try to understand what one side thinks, the other side thinks, and a third side thinks. Try to think of different special interest groups might be concerned as well. I'm not kowtowing to anybody, but I'm trying to ask that question at the end of the day that the viewer wanted me to ask. What are they thinking?
Right.
And sometimes that can be a very simple question. Sometimes I think it doesn't even matter what the answer was. It's how are you phrasing the question? That's actually more important sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to them to answer or to fall into the political speak, PR speak, all that kind of jargon that gets many companies and politicians into trouble. So yes, absolutely aspire to being that fair journalist. But I'm okay sometimes. If you have a right-wing government, maybe the press is going to be a little center-left. That's what they should do. And when there's a center-left government, maybe go a little to the right. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but enough that you're in the center. Where's the center in regards to the viewer?
Mainstream media plays a role. How do you, though, then go about making a decision on which one do you trust the most?
I get that conversation all the time. I'll talk to friends and say, oh, I just found this out. Or and when I'm talking to family, sometimes they'll come up, I've got a few families and family members who bring up an odd story that they read somewhere. And I go, what's the source for that? And it's always some obscure.
And that's the question to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. That's a huge question to ask. And I think I think we may have to get to a course, to a point where maybe we should have media literacy courses in elementary and even in high school.
Right.
Because the sourcing is the challenge now. Because one of the things that we saw under Trump and particularly with Putin and Facebook was all these sites, it's all an algorithm. So the New York Times would be at the same level of some a website that's been created by partisans, right? You're seeing that a lot of it. It's called the pink slime media, where they're just set up temporarily. And during election time, these sites, it can be the Poughkeepsie Tribune. Right. Well, it's set up for that election.
Yeah.
To look and sound like a webzine or a newspaper, a site. But really, it's partisan. Yeah. And its funding is not through subscriptions. It's one or two donors are paying for all that. So it's something nefarious.
Completely outside of the system.
Completely outside the system, right? Yeah. And you're seeing a lot more of that. And that's a huge challenge there.
And this is where we have to
be
careful.
In the era of bots, of the pink slime media, as they call it, I think media literacy matters more than ever before. And I think that's where parents have to play a role. I think educators especially, and we should be teaching these things in high school. Because I think you see that. It's harder to govern today. Right. Because as a centrist politician, you're getting pulled by the far left and by the far right. And that's one of the challenges we have, is how do you bring back the mainstream and talk about the centrist position where most British Columbians sit at politically?
So do you seek out other sources to validate information that you're going, okay, that's new to me? Or do you say, I just trust that outlet?
No, I do. I mean, I got a subscription to the New York Times, the Financial Times, the Economist, the local newspapers, the Globe and Mail. I read, you know, if I find something interesting, I'll seek sources. But in many cases, they're broad think tanks that cover this area, an academic that may be following that particular expertise. You go to the local press. If it's an international story, you go to the local press to get some perspective as well in regards to why things are happening. Very rarely do I go to a blogger that teaches me something. I go to somebody who may be an expert in something that may be blogging about it. But generally speaking, the sources that you can set up on your Twitter feed and your Facebook feed are there to use, you know. So I think it's more and more it's up to the individual. But I think educators and parents have to play a significant role in regards to educating the public. And I think the media, the mainstream media, has to do a better job telling their story, which they never do. They get hammered all the time, whether political class, the corporate class. You've got activists on the far left or on the far right attacking them. The MSM rarely tell their own story.
So my takeaway here, Jazz, is that, yep, consume information, but don't just jump at it as being the most accurate. Do a little extra work. Yeah. Find those sources that you say over time they're proving out that their take on it is as close to the truth as they can get, but the responsibility still lies with you as a viewer to make sure that you're checking that this is accurate information.
It's basic civics. The media are there, but you as a citizen have an obligation to your community and your country and your province to be educated and to learn about your community as well. And it doesn't just fall on media outlets, right? Or a particular politician or a particular CEO. You have to learn how to think critically and be engaged as a citizen. That's where democracy works, and that's why Canada and British Columbia have worked, continue to work, and let's make sure they will always work with you. But I think the public will get there too. I think the more and more of these news organizations get eroded, we're going to hit a moment where we're going, wait a minute, we've got to fix this. And we may not be there yet, and that's what concerns me. But when I go back to what I said in regards to the Googles, the Facebooks, the Twitters, that's free content that they're using to make billions and billions and billions in profit.
Yeah.
Right? Particularly with Google and Facebook. You have an obligation to society, not undermining its institutions. You have to do a better job. Facebook already got caught with his pants down, particularly with the last election and how they handled things. You realize the system was broken. And they have to be responsible for that.
Right.
Have they gotten a little bit better? Sure. But I don't think, it's a company run by engineers at the end of the day, right? It's not a company that's run by journalists. And I know they have hired some journalists in regards to helping them understand. But they've got to do a better job. And I think some of it's going to come down to profit sharing. If you're going to use someone's content, you better pay them for it in some capacity. And that's where you can actually start bolstering these news organizations once again.
Yeah.
But until that happens, this is going to be a challenge moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in and sharing your insights.
My pleasure, my friend. Okay.